So welcome to the Cinebums. We're just talking about John's new show, Turn That Dial, which is the newest achievement that the Cinebums have accomplished, and the newest, just our newest product, you know, our newest brand.
Fresh product on the market.
I don't know. And John, I don't know if you want to just like, for people who did watch it, just give some direction on what you were like thinking and what you're going for with this, with the new show.
I was thinking a lot about the roots of the episode, or not the episode, of the podcast. And and even so, it started out as like more of like a classic film podcast, just because I was like in that, like fresh out of college, took a Alfred Hitchcock class, like in that mindset. And and then even Luke and I, those of you who, I don't know, the big Cinebums heads, you might know, even back in like the early days, we did do more like classic.
Yeah.
Like we'd do like a Howard Hawks episode.
We tried to carry that forward, you know?
Yeah. And then we quickly,
I think once we decide, we like found out we didn't have to do that, we like never did it again, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. But yeah, I guess I was just thinking randomly just about, because I just go through these phases where I just will watch old TV shows. And we were just talking about Pluto TV on like a recent episode. Mm-hmm. And on Pluto, there's so many just of those like old TV channels. And I'll watch like the old Dean Martin roasts on there, or Mary Tyler Moore Show, which was the first episode that you can check out.
Right.
And I've talked a lot about The Twilight Zone too, which is one of my favorite shows. So so that's, and I did an episode of that in the very early days of the podcast. I was kind of thinking about going back to that, and just also like I do graphic design, during my day job, and something that always like gives me inspiration doing that is watching like old movies and old TV where they have like interesting title cards and just design in general, just there's like that 60s, 70s era, like the art deco that I am definitely drawn to. So, I'm actually hoping to do another Twilight Zone episode soon. And I might have a guest on for that one, to be determined. But yeah, it's kind of what I'm thinking for the next episode.
Oh man, that sounds awesome. I love Twilight Zone. That was such like a comfort TV show for me. And
same.
It was so like, creative, like the fact that they could be so creative with the TV show, and like it didn't have to be like linear or something. It's just it was so easy to put on, you know, and just like zone out.
You could jump into any episode and it's like a full story just in one. And and even like these are from like the 50s, but I just feel like they still hold up so well today. And I've watched some of the I don't know if Jack, if you've seen any of like the new Twilight Zone episodes, but they're just like missing something.
I haven't. The one where it's like, I think it's Jordan Peele that.
Yeah, he was like an executive producer, I think.
Yeah.
Which I think was like their way to get people to watch, to be like interested in watching.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're just like, they're kind of mediocre. They're just something like missing with the stories. I think they're just trying too hard to be like profound or something, but yeah, nothing will beat the original Twilight Zone for sure.
Yeah, well, I just want to brush on that because like it's kind of us first time on air announcing that we're trying to expand content a little bit, and John is the first one to land on the moon, if you will, and so like he's getting the ball rolling and John, you're also bringing your sort of your vibe and your like speed and your cups of tea with your wife, and John is bringing you into his lovely comforting home, you know, so that we can all watch. If you don't have one like John's, you can watch his and be like, and dream of having the same lovely comforting home.
Just transport yourself to this comfort zone.
Yeah, this nice, relaxing,
the water's just fine.
Positivity. Yeah. Yeah. So everyone check out what more is coming up from Turn That Dial.
Yeah. Yeah. And Luke, you have something coming up too? Or is that under wraps still?
No, it's no, sure, we can. It's not under wraps. I'm also going to do my own show coming up soon. It's a show I wrote. There's a little pre-production involved, you know? So now, and then I have to shoot it myself and everything. But it's going to be called Diaries of a Cinnabum, and it's going to delve more into, I think, John and I are in ways, tackling, each in our own way, tackling what the roots of the podcast is, while John, you're going back to more classic things and just doing something that's untouched, but that we haven't done. I'm trying to get to the, I don't know, I guess what the brand is means to me. And it's basically about being a comfort zone for people who have just sat around and watched, movies. So that's what I'm going to try to focus on. I'm going to try to focus on that theme and my experiences of doing a lot of that. So yeah, now's a good time to introduce our guest. It's my good friend Jack Zoll. He lives out in LA, and he knows, and one of the reasons why he's on here, along with most of the people we have on here, is he knows a good amount about, you know, he watches a lot of movies, you know, so that he has, you know, his word here is gold. So thank you for coming on, man.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. We've done quite a bit of sitting around watching movies together. So.
Right. Yeah.
Kind of makes sense that I end up on here. Listen to it. And it's definitely a comfort listen when I'm driving my car. So you guys provide me with a lot of entertainment.
Yeah, and I asked our last guest this. I don't know if you want to go into maybe your, I don't know how you got started into really being into movies. How you got started to where you are now, you know?
Yeah, man, my mom was really into movies, and so that's kind of how I got into it. She was huge into movies. She was huge into Oscars too. So every movie that would be nominated that year, she would watch them and make
an award follower.
Yeah, award follower for sure. And so that really started my love for movies. I don't know, I kind of got more thinking critically about movies in college probably, and realizing oh, I like certain movies, I don't like certain movies. And then just since then, it's just been down a fucking rabbit hole, man, and I can't stop. It's sometimes I think it's a problem, but I do it. Yeah. And I moved out to Los Angeles when I was during the middle of COVID and shit. And that's how we met, Luke. And it's a fucking wild time. But yeah, we're out here now. We're grinding away.
Yeah. And really moving out here because straight up being so into movies, literally, you know, otherwise I don't see much of a reason other than that. To move out here, but other than the weather, maybe, and the hiking advantages.
I don't know. We were I was talking to John before the show, and it's man, if I could live in Northern California, I totally would, because I love the weather so much more up there.
Yeah, here,
it's really painful, but it's you said, the love of movies is keeping me
here. Keep you here. Yeah, actually, if you're ever wondering, I was in Lake Tahoe, and that's most Northern Cal I've been since I got out here. And I was all the trees and the cool weather. I was this is fantastic. But also I was at I was at Universal, you know, Studios last week. And there's if you've ever been, there's this one viewpoint where it kind of just shows you all the studios that are around, Disney, Warner's, and then Universal. Yeah. And then I'll be there and I'll be just so nerding out, you know, I'm this is where it all happens. This is why I'm here. So cool. Look at these big brown buildings, you know, but these big brown buildings, you know, have so much amazing history that has, you know, captured my mind crazy.
But yeah, no, it definitely is cool. Being around here and being around actual history of movies and stuff, and like all like the studios and like just
To say you live in movie town, I mean, you know, so when you think of it that way, you're like, all right, things couldn't be better, you know?
Yeah, I like being around like the fact that I couldn't see Parasite in 2019 for like ever, dude, because it was not playing.
Yeah, right.
I can see any movie I want.
School in like, where was it, Oregon or?
Yeah, dude. Yeah,
that'd be why.
Yeah. So it's like, at least I have access to like movies and people talk about movies and stuff. And I don't know. Yeah. I find that really comforting in a way, and like a good way for me to like connect with people. I don't know. I always try to reach conversations when I don't know what to talk about with like, hey, what are your movies? What do you like watching?
Yeah.
Do you like TV or something? So.
Well, and it's funny how like networking out here, like to show value to someone, you literally say, I saw this last week and I think this and this about it. And they're like, oh, okay. You know, like that's actually networking out here. It's like, I watched like a show or a movie and I have this opinion on it. But on the other hand, I like what you said, because I think we talk about this on here all the time about sometimes I think it's a problem, but I don't know. I think we've had like a number of years where I feel like that was the underlying thing at the core of the show is like, we used to just go on here with complete lack of structure and just kind of like how this is going now and literally list every film that like we watched in the past 2 months. But it was fun. And we found like, we were able to find something to say about everything. Yeah. Just like, those were like, I just feel like that's, that's what we were doing. And you're just wondering like, where is life outside of this? And you don't know how to find it, I guess, especially maybe in the middle of the pandemic. You're young, you have your depression and your agoraphobia is really kicking in, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was definitely like our book club for movies during like COVID times. Yeah. But even, you know, you're talking about like being a problem. Friend of the show, Simon Sager, I don't remember if he said this on the show or to me one time, but he said he doesn't see like him watching like a bunch of movies in a day as like, you know, it's like taking over his life. He just sees it as research for his like career, you know, so trying to just like reframe that.
And I see it that way to a degree too. And I've like, I used to like definitely be like, oh, it was a productive day because I watched at least two films, you know?
Yeah. You got those checked off your list.
When you watch a movie, do you feel satisfied after you watch a movie? Because like sometimes I feel like it really depends on the movie. But the most satisfying thing for me is like when I wake up the next day and I'm thinking about the movie I watched. Does that happen?
Yeah. If it carries over, I know what you mean. If it carries over, sure.
Those movies, like it doesn't matter like how many like 10, 20 bad movies I watch. Like just that one movie like keeps me going, you know what I mean? Like
movie,
they can just like change the way you think about things and like the way you think about life just a little bit, I think is like totally worth like the value of like doing this and talking about this, you know what I mean? Cause like they really are like pretty monumental in terms of like affecting people's lives, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's what you're going for is you're trying to watch each movie, but then sometimes you watch like, for instance, I watched Fast X last weekend, and then, you know, then you don't get that and you just get filled with more. You're not getting what you're saying. You're getting filled with more of the world's like bullshit, you know? It's like I could have just driven down, you know, the street and gotten what Fast X gave me.
Yeah, I don't want to sound snobbish because like there's definitely a place for like the Fast X's of the world. Like I'm not gonna like be a total like cinema snob and be like, you can't watch this, so you have to know these directors or whatever. Like, no, it's like if you enjoy it and it brings you like entertainment and comfort in your life, like I think movies are like super beneficial no matter what.
Yeah. No, I think like
if you're wasting time, you're not wasting time. You're watching the movie is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's an element of like, you are either rattling them off because you want to say you watched it or you're trying to log it on Letterboxd, or there's also an element of like, I'm looking for therapy in this. And I feel like At this point in my life, as time became more like, as I had less and less time to do that, I had to like, whenever I watched them, I wanted to be like, okay, I want this to make me like feel better. I want this to, or like make me think about the world differently or just be therapeutic for me. I think that's what I started to seek out more. All right. Yeah. Well, today is horror. It's horror month. It's October. So we have to do obligatory horror episodes. So we're doing something we've never done. We've done a bunch of horror scores and not a bunch of just scores and soundtracks before. Yeah. We've done a lot of them, but we've never done horror scores and soundtracks. So that's why today is different. Yeah. So this is untouched territory. So yeah. You're on here with us making history.
Hell yeah.
And we all talked before we were recording about how, well, a little bit about how we're not all super confident, I guess, about
right
this topic in general. But
yeah, mm-hmm.
We're going for it either way.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that means we'll appeal more to broader audience. I don't know. But I guess maybe sometimes I compare. I'm like, oh, I think what would it happen if, like, say, Jake did this episode horror scores and soundtracks and what his list would be. And that's maybe what's like I'm comparing to always in my brain and why I'm just like looking at my down at my list constantly.
Yeah. Jake would put a lot of Frank Hedenlauer and like really deep cuts.
Exactly. And I don't have that, you know. Yeah. I don't have the deep cuts. Cause of course what I first think of is Halloween or something like that, The Shining and Psycho. And I'm like, and then I immediately, like, my inner monologue goes like, God, that's terrible. That's so typical of you. That's like doing horror scores and soundtracks and picking, you know, Star Wars by John Williams or something like that, which, you know, we've never done before. But let's see how this goes. I feel like we'll surprise ourselves. And you're about to get listed 15 scores, not necessarily different scores and soundtracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, might be some crossover.
There's usually crossover, which is okay. Don't worry if that happens, Jack. We'll guide you through that when that happens. Usually we end up just talking at the same time. Yeah, just remember the rules. It's scores and soundtracks. We're not just
and
doing
and also soundtracks.
And yeah. Sometimes it's a score and a soundtrack.
It's always exciting when there's a score and a soundtrack in one.
I have one or two of those.
Oh boy. Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
So this is gonna, I should have done a little more research here. What's the difference between a score and a soundtrack? Can you like break that down?
Oh, so it's like, okay, that's a good question, Jack. Cause some people are listening might also not know. What are these guys saying? Score and soundtrack, score or soundtrack. score is like it was original music composed by someone, you know, for the film. When a soundtrack, it's like a curated group of existing music.
Like,
you know,
Scorsese's Rolling Stones songs.
Yes, and everything. Yeah. For instance, Scorsese's Rolling Stones songs, and then Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross in Gone Girl or The Social Network. Or Johnny Greenwood in There Will Be Blood. And then, but Boogie Nights has the soundtrack. So, yeah.
So for my fifth pick, I chose The Exorcist, the original Exorcist, not the remake that just came out, so you're not confused. I don't know, it's just I feel like William Friedkin in like the 70s, his movies just slapped so hard, and he was like on his game, my god, dude. And he's like notoriously like an asshole. I think he like fired the guy that was like supposed to do the music, so
the original guy,
yeah, like he would fire people left and right. But then eventually he ended with Jack Nietzsche, who did this score, I believe. Mm-hmm. Man, this movie's like so good. Just like being like a, I don't know. I just, when I think of like a like haunted mansion or like a creepy house or something, like this is like the music that I think of is like just like it kind of like. scores and soundtracks kind of like lull you into like a false sense of security. Like that's what horror does really well, right? Is like it kind of plays around with like your comfort level. And this one definitely doesn't until like ramps up at the end. And then I don't know, just I think like for me, it's like it's got to be on my top five for sure.
Nice. Now, that's a good one. I don't remember like specifically, the music doesn't stick in my head that much, but I do remember like each scene and like the shot of the rain, the guy standing in front of the house, and like the music being prevalent for sure. And like very much adding to everything that makes that movie one of the probably the scariest that there is.
Yeah, I just listened to like the first 5 seconds just now, and it was like immediately
to get some context for this.
I was immediately brought back to, I actually watched The Exorcist for the first time last year. I'd never seen it before last year. But yeah, I was immediately transported back to watching this. And yeah, it's something about like it almost sounds like haunted, like church music in a way too. That's
that main theme. With like that theme, the theme of it and stuff,
which church music can already sound like pretty scary.
Yeah, I think in the right context, like the kind of slow organ playing of church music is it can be very terrifying or very funny. It depends what context you're in.
I think this movie, like, man, we talk about like horror movies, like I'm such a scaredy cat, dude. I really am.
Like, I am as well. Yeah. Like when
we watched Hereditary together, Luke.
And, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. Like, I'm like, you sure you want to watch this? You're like, I have to watch this. And I was like, fuck. All right. Let's do it.
Yeah.
But
I had to invite you guys over so you could watch it with me.
Yeah. Oh, God. But this movie, like, as a kid, this was like the movie that scared me so much. Like, I don't know, something about like the little girl and the devil and stuff. Like, it stuck with me. And I heard someone say recently, like, oh yeah, you know, like by today's standards, The Exorcist wouldn't be that scary of a movie or something. I'm like, nah, dude, I'm still terrified of this movie. Like, scared me to my core.
Yeah. That's same for my mom, actually. My mom, if you talks about how The Exorcist when she was a kid really got to her. And I think it's also she saw it young and she grew up very Catholic, and that has a lot to do with it. Because if you think about it, like these movies and any movie where it's about like the devil, if you're like a serious Catholic, there's even a deeper level to how it's like scary for you. You know, you're literally like, you know, like the priest who's shaking and stuff like that.
Yeah, I grew up Catholic, so it was like as a kid, I was like, oh, this is like believable to me.
Yeah, I watched this one really stupid movie that came out this past year called, it's with Russell Crowe, and it's called The Pope's Exorcism. Pope's Exorcist, one of those two.
Yeah.
And it's so bad, and it's just Russell Crowe is this like Italian priest who does like exorcisms for like the Vatican or whatever, and so he's really deep in that, like he's like the go-to, but he's almost they portray him almost like he's like an action hero as an exorcist, you know, or like he's some like badass, and he's Russell Crowe, and he's got the stupid Italian accent, he's like drinking and stuff like that. It was ridiculous.
He's like a badass priest.
Oh, there's just a new exorcist, isn't it? Like David Gordon Green, that is that his name? Exorcist Believer or something like that.
I don't know if it is David Gordon Green. Let's see.
I thought it was.
I saw these billboards in Los Angeles for the new Exorcist, and I was like, oh shit, they're re-releasing the Exorcist in theaters. All right, that's really cool.
And right,
like,
right.
No, it's just the Exorcist, and then the two's like in between the O's, so like you can't really tell it. I'm like, all right. But yeah, I have to see that eventually when I get the nerves.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Just like going off of David Gordon Green, it's like I'm looking and it looks like the same team that does the Halloweens is now doing The Exorcist. So,
okay, the first one I'm going to go with is kind of a weird one. And I do, and I know, Luke, you were trying not to be too basic. I think I tried to mix it up too. I have some that might be a couple, maybe a little basic, but I try to get a couple different ones in there. And this one is like that too. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but my number five is Chopping Mall. The Chopping Mall.
I don't know that one.
This is a pretty bad B movie. But I remember seeing in you know, my roommates and I in college, we went through a phase where we watched a few like bad movies, like Troll 2 and Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And then I think and this was one of them too, Chopping Mall. And it's sort of like a, it's such an 80s movie because it takes place in this like mall, and it's teenagers having sex. It's a mall, and there's like a futuristic RoboCop type like security thing, like R2-D2 type thing that just terrorizes these teenagers who are having sex in the mall.
This looks fantastic for like what you're saying, the context of what you were doing. You're just watching with your friends and having beers or something. Like, I want to do that right now. That looks just, it looks great.
No, it's one of, it's one of those like B horror movies that's fun to watch in a group because of how
bad
it is.
A B horror sci-fi thing.
I'm going to watch this. I'm definitely going to watch this.
It's like, only an hour and 17 minutes too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's such an easy watch. And but it's also, it's so funny because there's like, I'll get to that. I should get into the soundtrack too, of course. Yeah.
But I guess on, I know what we're saying.
The only other thing about the plot is like, I just feel like the stakes are really, I mean, the stakes are high because these like robots are like killing people, but it just seems like, so they're just like these little like Roomba things. Eyes and stuff, and then they have like all this like all these weapons and stuff for like mall security, and it just seems so good. Like, I don't know, I was just, I think we were talking like when we watched it, and I was just like trying to remember that like you could just like get a big blanket and like put it over the top of the thing and it couldn't see and then you'd be totally like, there's just like so many ways that could have just easily gotten out of it, but yeah, that's not, you don't watch it to pick apart, you know, the plot holes in Chopping Mall. But anyway, soundtrack.
That's actually a good episode that we do. We do find the plot holes and in deep.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Chopping Mall. Yeah.
Really analyze movies like this. but yeah, the soundtrack really stuck out to me because it's just this 80s like synth heavy electronic soundtrack, and it sounds honestly like any video game from like the Super Nintendo, like Sega Genesis era. Like, it's basically like an old video game soundtrack, which I do really like those too.
Anytime, that's kind of, a lot of people have nostalgia for that,
who
are making music nowadays, I feel.
Totally, yeah, like people love like Final Fantasy soundtracks always get talked about a lot still. And I do really like that sort of era of and even like new games nowadays too, like Stardew Valley, if anyone knows that one, that has a very like kind of retro-y electronic synth soundtrack to it. And so yeah, it's just throughout this whole movie, it's just that music, like this video 80s 90s video game music. And there's a couple songs that are actually like really good. Like, I would honestly just like, I didn't think about this until I was like getting ready for this episode, but I would honestly listen to this while just like working on something or like doing the dishes, doing some chores. Like, I do like enjoy the music.
There's always some dishes or some chores, you know.
Man, always dishes to be done, you know.
what weird horror soundtrack am I going to put on during the laundry? Yeah.
Yeah. What's going to help me do these chores right now? I got some
dishes waiting for me after this episode, so I can't wait for all your recommendations of what I'm going to listen to while I do them, you know?
Yeah.
It's what I get for cooking up a good meal, right?
You deserve for myself. It.
I pay, for, you know, that's how the price you pay.
Yeah, you've earned the Chopping Mall soundtrack. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you just have to, when you listen to it, you have to picture a little room about killing everyone there.
Yeah, right. It is a little scary to think that there could be like a Roomba, a rogue Roomba coming out from, around the corner to kill you. But that's.
Do you know where Chopping Mall is?
Actually, I think I was actually looking this up. I think it's an LA mall. It's probably, you guys probably know it.
There's a lot of options out here.
Yeah.
Mall to take place.
I got to find this.
Sounds like it'd be a Valley Chopping Mall. Does the music, like, is it just like, does it go with the movie, or does it like on its own, or does it stand on its own as well?
I feel like it stands on its own.
Yeah.
Do you feel like at times it doesn't fit with the movies, like it's too good for the movie a little bit?
Almost, because it's just such a, I mean, I think the soundtrack is at least a little bit like goofy in a sense too, so you're not going to take it too seriously, but it is funny, like I'm going to spoil a little bit, but it's not going to make a difference, but there's a point where they they're shooting these things with these like assault rifles and like military grade weapons that they're shooting these, you know, killer vacuums with, and then the music is getting like really crazy too, and it's so hard to like take that seriously. The music gets really intense, but I still think it's like it just fits so perfectly because it's these like 80s mall vibes and and it is a little goofy too. I got the location. The Sherman Oaks Galleria.
Oh, okay, dude.
I live right by there.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Valley Shopping Mall. I won't name drop any other random malls, but yeah. Wow,
it all takes place there. So I'm guessing they just rented out the mall for like a night, and then
Another good episode theme. Where do all the mall movies take place? Where does Mallrats take place, for instance? You know, where does Dawn of the Dead? All that stuff.
Man,
so much curiosity. But those movies, guys, couldn't be farther off in probably esteem.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
But yeah,
Chopping Mall, it's up there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it goes up right with The Exorcist and The Halloweens and The Shinings, really. Yeah. I think Kubrick was in talks to make it too.
Lines.
But it fell through. I think he had something else going on.
But he wanted to take 8 years to make it, and then
It was budget
stuff. They wanted to make it in 4 years, and he said, I won't have enough time to like make the robots.
Mm-hmm. There's more of a story to be told here than in 4 years. Yeah.
All right. My first one is possibly known as the greatest John Carpenter film, Ennio Morricone's The Thing score. So obviously I thought about like doing Halloween for this episode, but again, didn't want to be too basic. You know, like Carpenter, of course, is such a renowned composer, but it's so cool how in like, so maybe the most well-regarded film, it's not him. It's, maybe the greatest film composer that there ever was to some people. This is kind of it's kind of what I said about The Exorcist, and it might be a recurring theme for more of mine, but I don't really, like, I don't think The Thing score really is something that you just remember, really, and like, oh, I want to listen to that over and over again, but I think it's fairly effective for just like what the thing is, and just in like telling the story, creating tension, just being very unique for what it is, not sounding like a spaghetti Western or Once Upon a Time in America or something like that. And especially creating tension and just being very, it's also a lot of times very kind of experimental and strange when the score comes in, I think, for the scary, really scary moments when the thing is like evolving. And I think that is like what is needed here. This is another thing that I think will come back later when I talk about more of the score and soundtracks. But I think that when the thing is a bit of a slow burn at times, and I think that music is very like necessary when the pacing is like that, especially in horror. Ennio Morricone's The Thing.
I fucking love Carpenter. I kind of got into him like just recently. Because I was like, oh, yeah, you know, John Carpenter's a thing or whatever. But I watched They Live recently and like,
yeah,
dude, he's so like, as a filmmaker, he's someone that I feel like you can give him like a really small budget and he'll make something like really good. Like, I think there's like a talent to being able to like pick his crew, pick his talent, and like know how to execute things. And in The Thing, like with the score, it's just so perfect because like you're saying, like, they're so isolated and it does really like slow down. A lot of the tension is like in what's like unsaid, but like with like the score kind of carrying you through that, it is like really, really.
Right.
I wasn't thinking of that, but like, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, think Alien too. I feel like Alien's a similar example where Alien very isolated, and the score carries you through in a similar way. And I just feel like maybe that's just more, I don't know, when I was trying to be less basic, it was like, oh, let me think about this in a different way, you know, because I've never really thought about, until I try to think more outside the box, I don't think about The Thing score ever. I think about the effects, but then I go back and I look for the score. I'm like, oh, it's Ennio Morricone, of course. And I think that's something I only like, no, after the credits roll, always after the credits roll, I'm like, oh, this movie's so fucking good. And then it shows Ennio Morricone. Oh, I'm like, oh, damn, of course he did the score. Like, that's crazy too, you know?
Yeah, I forget that he did the score for that. But that's so true. It's like those slow burn movies that you really need, like, I don't know, the score does a lot of like the heavy lifting and like the slower scenes in between like the big shocks.
There's like one part of the score where it's just so weird and experimental and sounds like a million different percussions playing to create this crazy tension thing. And I was listening to it last night on my drive home, as normal people do. And I was like, this is amazing. You know, whatever this is, you know, I don't know how he made this.
Yeah, that's the thing for me, is like being hard of hearing. Like, I can tell when the note's low, I can tell when the note's high. I don't know what they're playing to like get the note or whatever. So kind of think about music differently, but like definitely like when something's being carried by music, I think I appreciate it a little more because I'm like, oh, I was thinking of it that way, you know? And I definitely see that in Thing. I definitely see that in Alien and like, yeah, I think isolation movies are like fucking hard to pull off, dude. Really hard to pull off.
Yeah.
So I think you guys probably have this one on your list, I'm assuming, just because you've talked about it a lot, but feel free to jump in. But for my number four, it's The Shining.
It's on my list too.
I do not. I tried not to pick it, but I could have easily been like you guys and picked it. Let's talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to hum sometimes, you know, like the score, acting like I have a voice that sounds like it, but like da 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 da. Yeah, The Shining.
Yeah, this is like one of my favorite movies when I think of horror. I love Kubrick so much. Like, I think this is my opinion, but like I think like he's definitely like the bar for like being a director. Like, he's like as high as you can get. Like, everything he made, I feel like, was perfect. And this soundtrack or the score by like Wendy Carlos and Rachel Elkin, who also did Clockwork Orange.
Which you
It's
can
like,
tell, yeah, I think.
dude, Clockwork Orange is like another great one. But it's so like haunting. It's also kind of like an isolation movie, like, but it's not like there's like, you need like the slow moments like with music to carry the suspense. It's more like, it's like almost like a haunting, like Christmas theme at first. And then like he starts to go crazy and stuff, and he starts to chase him around. Like, it really kicks in the like very like psycho like influenced music where like Jack's going crazy, and like, oh my god, dude, like I love this movie so much. And I think the score is like definitely something that like really elevates it to like a high level.
And even I mean, this is also a bit of a soundtrack too. There's a score and a soundtrack, because all the like old-timey
It's
true. It's
what would it be,
true.
yeah.
Ragtime? I
With
don't
the
know what you'd
bar,
call
like
that genre.
the bar song, the
And like the party, like, and those I find like those to be just as eerie and unsettling too as like the score, because it's just, you know, something's so off. And even, you know, when it's just like an empty room and he's at the bar and there's music, just something so off about it. And then too, I always think of like the scene when he's in the bathroom, talking to, what is he talking to, like the past caretaker or whatever. And that scene is just gets so creepy, and like the music that's like going on outside, it's
There's always like shimmers going in the score as like the vibe builds, and it just kind of intensifies and intensifies. And I feel like it has part of like I feel like Kubrick is always like trying to like hypnotize the audience in a way, like really sink it under your skin. And specifically this one, it's like sink the horror vibes under your skin. And like I think the score has a big plays a big part in that, because as it's you're just feeling this like these crazy shimmers coming at you, and watching like this unsettled family in this isolated hotel and all these images, you know.
Dude, like I almost put Psycho for this, but like it just because it's so influential, and like it's just stuck in my head. Like, anytime anyone does an homage, like it's, you just instantly understand it, you know? But I kind of like the way this builds on it a little more. I feel like it's a little more like complete, and I kind of like, yeah, it was really between the two, but I chose The Shining because I feel like I like all the music they incorporate with like the old timey stuff, but then like the build up and stuff, and just like a haunted Christmas movie is like kind of cool.
No, that's a great pick. And I was actually watching this video the other day that was showing like all the ways that Kubrick used like music to go along with like Jack Nicholson's like movements. And like, he would like he'd be like whipping his hands around or something, and then like the strings would just go like something crazy. And I never really noticed that before, but there's a lot of like moments throughout where he's like he's doing something, there's someone's movements cause something, and like the strings will just go like crazy for a second to like match that. Yeah, I thought that was kind of unique too. I never really noticed that too much watching it, but yeah.
That's cool. Where did you have yours, or do you want to not say?
I don't remember. I'll have to find it. Maybe I'll send it to you guys. There's another one that showed like how often Jack Nicholson would like look into the camera. And there's like a creep. I don't know if this is from like a documentary about the making, but he would like every now and then like glance into the camera, and it's like a really creepy thing, really creepy detail to like notice then.
But yeah, dude, like all the little effects in The Shining, like, really add to the horror, and like definitely the score plays a big part. So that's why I put it at number four.
I'll go with my number four then is Beetlejuice. And
Is that a
yeah,
soundtrack or is it a score? Is it both?
it's both. It's
It's a
mostly a
lot. It's a
score
lot of
though.
things. It's also a little musical in times, right?
Yeah, well, there is a Beetlejuice musical that is that's going on right now. That's pretty popular. I don't know if you guys know Lauren Boebert. She's like awful congresswoman from Colorado. Yeah, she
I remember that.
got kicked out of a theater for vaping and like singing along to all the songs.
No
She's just
way.
like, yeah, she's just like the worst person. Not
Yeah.
because of that, because of other crazy things. But yeah, anyway, that's why like Beetlejuice the music was in the news in Colorado at least recently. But yeah. But yeah, I don't know if you guys are Beetlejuice fans at all, but this was one that I loved growing up.
I didn't see it till like a couple years ago on a plane, when I was coming out to LA to look for apartments. But when I watched it, I was like, oh yeah, I see why this is like well beloved. Like, this is pretty, I loved it. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. You know, and I don't really usually watch movies for the first time on a plane, but I definitely was like very satisfied that I picked that, you know.
That's funny. I watched Beetlejuice for the first time when I was traveling cross country to go to like move to Massachusetts. And so I was like in
Wow.
the
Oh,
car
okay.
for like 5 days. And I just like had these blockbuster movies that my parents, I guess, were like, yeah, we're never returning these. And we just like took them in the car, and like Beetlejuice was one of them. And I remember watching it and just being like, what the fuck is this? But I love it. It's like it's so cool, it's so playful. I didn't think of like I didn't think of this, like you're really thinking out of the box, like chopping mall, Beetlejuice. I was like, damn, I'm mind's been
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved this music for some reason too. I do like because this is Danny Elfman, for those who don't know, he did the score, and he also did the music for like Nightmare Before Christmas, which was also a movie that I liked growing up because of like the music in that too. And yeah, this is also Danny Elfman in this era, like he had those movies and like Batman, who I know I loved the music from all of those movies growing up. And yeah, I just think there's a nice like playful like fun energy to the Beetlejuice score, and it's like it has the like just the right amount of like creepiness to be like a Halloween type soundtrack, but it's also just very zany and because of the type of movie it is. And yeah, it's just one of those immediately it's Danny Elfman when you hear it too.
I always forget what a god Danny Elfman is. And I usually re-remember like when I rewatch Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movies every year. And then I'll like look up everything he did, and I'm like, oh my God, yeah, this guy's one of the greats. How can I always forget him, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think too, anytime I hear like a Danny Elfman score from somewhere, just if something's on TV that has it, then I'm like interested in watching you know, whatever that is, or interested in watching like one of my favorite movies with one of his scores. So yeah, I've just always loved this type of music. I think when I think of like, I don't know, like Halloween, like fun, like Halloween type music, it's like the Beetlejuice soundtrack. And yeah, and then it's also or I guess it's more of a score, but also a soundtrack.
Yeah.
Because I think there might be a couple scenes where they use, like they have like a needle drop maybe, but there's a great scene where they use the song Deo, you know, like Deo.
Yeah.
Daylight.
Yeah.
Come, yeah. And,
yeah. 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch. Daylight come. 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot,
bunch. Yeah, it's like the whole family around the right. dinner table, and they just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Catherine yeah. O'Hara is just like so great in that scene. And mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Juliette I can't
Lewis,
think of there's,
right?
Yeah, Juliette yeah. Lewis. I can't yeah. think of if there's other like songs that they incorporate in the movie. I think so, but that's the only
one
that comes
to mind. That's the big
one
I remember, because I remember like that's kind of, I think that's how they end it sort of, and I remember being like just so happy at that
yeah.
moment.
Yeah, definitely.
So my number four is going to be, I know it's at least Angelo Badalamenti's Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me score, but I think Twin Peaks is very much known for music. So if you're going to pick a Twin Peaks thing, whether it's, you know, there's all this Twin Peaks content out there. It's just about which one. For instance, Twin Peaks, The Return has such a good soundtrack, like that I own on vinyl. It's like just so fantastic. Like, I don't know if you guys have both seen The Return. Yeah. Okay. So there's like, you know, those final, shows at the club
yeah.
that were at the end of every single one. Yeah. Like I
yeah.
have like
yeah.
a vinyl where it's just all of those. And
oh, nice.
Those are great. Yeah. So the Twin Peaks is just so, it wouldn't exist without its attention to music.
Yeah,
feel.
Dude, like I sorry, car alarm was going off, so I muted myself, but like, yeah, I'm really excited you chose this, because
okay, yeah, I couldn't tell. I was like, can I they not hear me now, or can I not hear them? What's going on?
Yeah, but no, like
I'm trying to talk to
oh man,
but yeah. Yeah, Twin Peaks, man, music.
Yeah.
And then the original has like that very playful mm-hmm. score that is always playing, that gives it that like, oh, this is an old like melodrama we're trying to make fun
yeah.
of, or whatever. So I specifically chose Fire Walk With Me, not only because I think it's, not only is it probably like my favorite movie, if I had to pick out of the Twin Peaks stuff, I think I like Fire Walk With Me the most, between that, The Return, and the original show. But I love the score. It's so dark. It's so versatile. And it's so memorable. For instance, there's the opening theme, which just has this very memorable, like this like dark strings with like this, very sad saxophone playing over it, and it's kind of just preluding to the tragedy you're about to watch exist. There's also like this great scene where Laura Palmer's at this bar, and she's kind of like dancing with all these guys, kind of just rebelling in a way against her oppressive, you know, home life. And there's just this, it's one of those David Lynch scenes where like the song, where the like it just goes on and on and on, and the song just keeps playing and playing, and it's just, it's so good. It's like one of my favorite. I think everyone who's seen Fire Walk With Me knows this scene. I'll probably put this in the video. We'll be right back. it's so David Lynch, you know, it's like the type of rock that David Lynch likes. And Laura Palmer's just like dancing with this degenerate guy at the bar. And on top of that, this music also had, the score also has like a lot of the playfulness of the original movie, because there's a lot of that vibe that it brings to it. And so it kind of, it's not just one note, it's not just dark, and it tends to just serve whatever is needed. And to me, what is one of the scariest movies ever, if not the scariest. And we were talking about The Shining and others about how much the music is contributing to the horror, like sinking beneath your skin. And I feel like Fire Walk With Me, like The Shining, very much sinks beneath your skin. And I once watched this alone late at night at my parents' house during the pandemic, and I regretted it because I like just felt so uneasy after it.
Yeah, that scene in the bar always sticks out to me.
I
think it's just so long, or it's like that same sort of beat.
But you don't care. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. It's mesmerizing. Yeah.
It's so David Lynch, you know, that's that scene. Yeah. It's so David Lynch.
I owe like probably like half of my music taste to David Lynch, because he just showed me like so many like cool new music. Like, I love Chromatic so much.
Yeah, yeah. That's like that's one of those things in that last, when I'm talking about the vinyl thing, I own Chromatics is one of the features on there.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I have a David Lynch thing on here too. So like, I definitely want to talk about just like how talented he is at just like his sound design, and like when you like incorporate like certain like notes to like really fucking creep you out, dude. Like,
yeah.
You know, he's like such a master at that. And like, just like, if his ambiance noise is just able to like kind of get under your skin, like that's really effective, and just shows like,
we'll talk more once you, since you have a Lynch pick, I won't like go off that. I'll save it. We'll save it for your Lynch pick.
We can combine them right now, actually.
Because you're next. All right, yeah, let's combine them.
So my third pick is Mulholland Drive. And I know it's like kind of like a thriller mystery.
This is horror. It's fine.
Yeah, it's still scary as hell. Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched it with a bunch of people, and they're all like, is this horror? Is this like, this is getting really creepy. So like, I definitely am going to put it on here. One of my favorite movies of all time. It's also, how do you pronounce his name? Angelo
Badalamenti. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it. I'm trying to pronounce it.
I like that pronunciation. It sounded right.
That sounds right.
Milt Bollner and Sonny Boy Williamson II. And so it's also like a score and soundtrack. This, when I think about like music and stuff in films, like this is one that I feel like really is core to like the story in a way. Because have you guys seen Mulholland Drive, right?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
There's that scene like halfway through where he's like, Silencio, and like everything you see is a farce or whatever. And she goes up and sings, and then she like falls over like that. This movie means so much to me, because like, I'm like, oh shit, like there's more under the surface of just like watching a movie and stuff. And so I feel like the score and the music like means so much to me in this movie, and the way he incorporates it. Like, just, I get chills when I think about like when they're in the bed together and she's like yelling Silencio in her sleep, and like the way he like plays around with like the decimals or whatever of the like voice. It's like, oh God.
No, yeah, like the what you're saying before about like sound design and ambiance. Like he's, you can tell he's very like has his headspace very much in that, you know, because it's very controlled and very on point with what he is shooting, I feel. And even like the I feel like, you know how like Twin Peaks has its like kind of ironic score, like, you know, the theme to Twin Peaks is kind of ironic. I feel like Mulholland Drive has that like ironic score playing whenever Naomi Watts in Mulholland Drive is walking around,
yeah,
when she moves to Hollywood and expects, yeah, every, you know, she's naive and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's like all happy, upbeat. I remember like there's the beginning scene where it's like the very first scenes, like people swing dancing, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
all like really happy and like, yeah, just the juxtaposition of like how dark it gets, like,
yeah,
I don't know, like, yeah, he's like really toying like a horror director would, like with subverting your expectations of like,
yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, we, yeah, actually, that was I think, didn't we, for our Cinebums Film Festival, we did a double feature of, yeah, Mulholland Drive,
Cinebums Film Festival, yeah.
2020.
Well, you forgot it. Well, yeah. Well, we didn't. We're bringing it back. Yeah.
We did a double feature of Mulholland Drive and Ace Ventura, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's a wild double feature.
Yeah. That sounds good.
That was, yeah, fun. Yeah. And Mulholland Drive was very dark, and I think we were very spooked at the end of it for sure.
My number three is Rosemary's Baby. Yeah, I think just one of my favorite horror movies ever. And yeah, this is one of those soundtracks that I would not listen to while doing the dishes or, you know, just for fun.
All right. Because it's not actually fun, huh?
Yeah, because this one is actually really, it really creeps me out.
yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of time when we do like a scores and soundtracks episode, it's all stuff we would like probably listen to, but the horror version is different, obviously. But
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, just that like haunting like lullaby in the beginning.
Yeah.
And just a lot of that eeriness throughout like the movie with like the score going on. And it's like clearly, you know, like a nursery rhyme, I think.
Yeah.
Just definitely. That this woman is just like la-la, like singing la-la over. And yeah, it's just, it really sets the tone for this. I don't know, Rosemary's Baby is one of those that it's just so creepy and unsettling going through it, but there's not like a big, you know, a big scare moment until, you know, much later in the movie. I think that lullaby, and then there's other parts there's other scores throughout that it's like this just weird off kilter, like free jazz going on, yeah, that it, like a saxophone just kind of going crazy for 10 mm-hmm. seconds. And yeah, it all just sort of fits perfectly, this, you know, the mood around this building. And I think, yeah, it just really sticks out to you. That I think it's just so smart to use like that sort of like, because like with church music can be like creepy, soak in like children's music and like,
yeah,
nursery,
yeah,
rhymes and stuff when you use them in a certain way. So
yeah, Rosemary's Baby is definitely always just regarded as one of the greatest horror movies, so it makes sense for this to be on here. And I think the way it's bookended specifically with the music is always my favorite thing,
yeah,
about the movie too.
I haven't seen this in a while. Do you feel like it's so, I can't picture the score right now. But do you like, would you say that the score kind of is toying with the fact that it's like a nursery rhyme, or is it like kind of like that it's supposed to be creepy, or is it like just like if it were out of context, would you just be like, oh, this is just a nursery rhyme?
I think it's
Yeah,
supposed to be creepy.
that's a good point. I do think it does kind of sound like a regular nursery rhyme, but it's there is something about it that is really creepy too. And I think maybe it's yeah. I think there's something else. There's the music sort of underneath the woman going like la 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 whatever. I think that is definitely much more creepy than just a regular old nursery rhyme would be. So yeah, I feel like it's sort of just like melding the two, like this sort of creepy, haunting music with childish little tune too. So yeah. But yeah, that's a good thought though.
Rattling off some classics, guys. Rattling off
Yeah.
some classics. That was like your first classic, John. I thought maybe the first two were like a little
And Chopping
Beetlejuice is a
Mall.
classic. What am I talking about? You've had one
Yeah.
non-classic.
Chopping Mall's a fucking classic, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, all
Once you
right. So
guys see
he's
it, you'll
he
know.
hasn't had any classics then. I mean, he's had only classics. All right. My number three is also a classic, but a recent classic from last year. It is the score of and soundtrack of Jordan Peele's Nope by Michael Abels.
Very nice.
Very nice. Very nice pick.
Thank you. I think I was also like I said with a thing trying to be more outside the box, think differently. Not just pick Halloween Shining, Halloween Shining, Halloween Shining for every single. I started to think more about like these recent, because everyone remembers like Jordan Peele's movies, maybe more for like the concept, his writing, the actors that are in them, the humor, how memorable they are, and how fun they are, and also scary. But I feel like, maybe the music then is doesn't get as much shine, maybe outside of like, the obvious like Redbone and Get Out and like whatever song it is in Us that it was very big. But Nope, which is very Spielberg influenced, I feel like the score takes a lot of inspiration from that, from being like we are going to be like an old blockbuster that Jordan Peele is clearly so into trying to make right now. And a lot of this is a mystery. A lot of this is figuring out what's going on, like about, end a brother sister relationship. And I feel like the score kind of takes you through that. Like I could compare it to say, in Jaws, like when they're on the boat and they're like, where's the shark? They're like, just where's the shark? That's kind of similar to this. They're like looking in the sky. Where is this thing that this unknown thing? In Jaws, there's like the like this has its own version of that as they're like looking for this thing in the sky or trying to track it or and all that stuff. And on top of that, like it also, like, for instance, there's that really scary scene where they're in the arena in the old Western town and that the thing sucks all those people up. I re-listened to that, the track for that moment today, and that it gives you the chills. It reminds me of that moment. And it that is like that is one of the scariest scenes I feel like in recent memory. On top of that, it's also a soundtrack. So there's like Jordan Peele brings back a lot of like old soul, like soul songs. One that is sampled to death in hip hop, but that is a good thing, usually with soul music. And so these songs just kind of like, I don't know, are kind of like, you could tell close to Jordan Peele's soul a lot. And it's why he always adds them in his movie, or maybe have some deeper meaning in them that he wants to give to the movie, which I feel like, nope, you don't, especially on first watch, you don't know what the hell's going on. And that's what's so intriguing. And so music and certain hidden messages is a big factor.
Yeah. John and I were talking before the podcast started about how much we love this movie. And I'm so glad you put it on here, because like, it wasn't even an aspect that I thought I loved about this movie, but hearing you talk about it and hearing you break it down for me, like, really makes me have an even more appreciation for the music in it. And like the whole movie as a whole, like, really, man, so slept on, dude. Like, I feel like people just were like, yeah, it was good, and then like, but I'm like, no, this is a great movie. Like, every aspect of this movie is pulled off to perfection. And oh my god, I'm glad you picked
slaps
that.
Hard. Yeah, nope, slaps hard. And I don't remember the music in it. You know, that's, I think, the biggest thing is like, I wasn't like walking out wanting to re-listen to this. Same goes with The Thing. Like I said before, you're not really trying to re-listen to it, but you remember in your head how great that movie is, you know.
Mm-hmm. It did its job, I guess.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, is it works at the very least, even though maybe it doesn't stand out like, say, as much as say Psycho is such a, you know, that theme is so iconic, you know.
Yeah, I'll have to give the Nope soundtrack another listen. I can't like recall it all that well right now, but it's also, the soundtrack is probably also slept on like the movie is, which I remember Us had a good score too.
Yeah, I was thinking about picking that one too. They all kind of do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very like music focused, which and. I like I remember, yeah, like putting like Redbone and Get Out. I was like, oh, okay, this is cool that like this song just came out and it's already in the movie. My number two is Beyond the Black Rainbow. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
No. It's
Panos Cosmatos did Mandy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mandy.
this was his movie before Mandy. And the soundtrack's by Jeremy Schmidt, or the score, and it's very like, here I love like synth, like Tangerine Dream, like Lame Freak Sorcerer, or like Thief, and like
definitely
very inspired by Tangerine Dream, and it's like very heavy, and the story's about this like girl who has superpowers in this kind of like cult lab underground, but like the reason she has superpowers is because she was like exposed to so much acid, like taking acid and shit. And it's like, really, it's just like this crazy, like trippy, gross movie that just like is totally amplified by the music, and it's just like gets like heavier and heavier, and like I just love how like, trippy it just feels to like watch this movie and hear the music.
I'm so with you. I love that synthy Tangerine Dream vibe, as like everyone else does. Any influence that is repeated from that, I don't care if it sounds like that, I'm fine with it, you know, like give me more, everyone. Yeah, we just covered Heat, you know, that's Tangerine Dream right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jack, do you have a favorite Tangerine Dream score or soundtrack? I guess we've talked about Tangerine Dream a lot on these episodes, I think.
Oh, really? I just watched Sorcerer.
Yeah, I was all right. So that's the most recent one I watched too. And yeah, Tangerine Dream is good in that one. Yeah.
Oh my god, dude! Like I said about Friedkin earlier in this podcast, like, dude, he slapped, and that movie is so slept on.
It's the most unreal movie, and I feel like it's so there's so something so crazy and based in realism about it, and yet it has this synthy like dope fucking score. Yeah, I saw it for the first time after he died. Because Jake showed it to me after he died, and it had been too long, you know, that I hadn't seen Sorcerer, and yeah, damn, there's really nothing like Sorcerer.
Yeah. So I'd probably pick that, but then I also love like Thief a lot. I love Thief a lot. I haven't seen like, I know they did music for like, or the soundtrack for like The Keep with Kathryn Bigelow, which, I haven't seen, but I gotta check that out. And yeah, like, I don't know. It's just that like the juxtaposition of like what you're watching versus like the music that's just like so out of this world. You know what I mean? Like it's not like based in like little strings or something like that. Like I don't know. It's just yeah. I love that. Like watching something with like that in mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'll get to this more later, like, but this is a chance for me to bring up like some other nerdom I have other than like movies and comedy or whatever. John and I always talk about this, but like I actually am like kind of like a synth nerd in a way for like someone who doesn't own any, because how could I ever afford one? But like I think I love just like sound and kind of what you're saying, which is like synths have the ability to create these otherworldly sounds and feelings that are especially like you're saying in these movies very attractive. And I think movies and Tangerine Dream and others stuff that we'll mention eventually, like it makes everyone else like a synth nerd as well. Because it creates just such a distinct vibe and sound that is like really addicting.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. This movie, Beyond the Black Rainbow, you guys should check it out. It's a pretty quick watch. It's like kind of really like unsettling at times, but for the most part it's not like the scariest movie. But yeah, I think like out of all the movies I've seen, like with what you're talking about with synth and how it kind of like changes like your perception of that a little bit, I feel like this is the most aligned with like, okay, I expect synth to be in this movie. Like it's just so like weird.
I liked Mandy. I don't know. Did you guys like Mandy when it came out? I feel like that was kind of like a polarizing one.
I was mixed on Mandy. Yeah.
I liked Mandy a lot. Didn't know what I was getting into, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me neither.
But once it gets to the end, I'm like, oh, my God. I've been on such, like, a Nicolas Cage resurgence recently where, like, I will fuck, if I find out Nick Cage is in a movie, I'll be like, okay, I'm picking this. So I'm watching this tonight or whatever. Like, I don't know. I have, like, such, like, a reverence for his, like, acting now. I don't know what it is, but, like, Mandy definitely kind of like opened my eyes to that a little bit. So I like that a lot.
Speaking of Nick Cage, have you guys seen the trailer for that new Nick Cage movie?
Yeah.
I did.
Can't remember good. What it's called, but yeah, it looks really good.
Or what it's about, but it looks good.
Yeah.
But also I started Rainfield last night, guys, and I'll say that one is a more sleeper Nick Cage movie. Concepts. The concept's kind of, you know, you wish it was better, but I fell asleep during it.
Yeah. It's a shame. All right, my number two is, I think I'm pronouncing this right, it's Tenebrae. The Dario Argento giallo film from the 80s. And speaking of synths, this has a great synth score. This one is, yeah, now this one I would wash my dishes to. This one
Yeah. All the giallo ones you can definitely vibe to outside of it.
Yeah. It's just like banger after banger of these like power, like synth 80s ballads. And I actually didn't realize this until I was like trying to look more up about it, but Argento used this Italian band Goblin a lot.
And
for this movie, I guess Goblin had broken up, but he got a few of the members together to still do a soundtrack for it, because this is kind of him, like a return to form in a way almost. So and this one, the title track, the very first song on the soundtrack, called Tenebrae, is just, it's so good. It's just like, you can put it on repeat. Now. It's like, I just feel like I just want to like drive around and like listen to this. Yeah, and it has like it's like this futuristic like 80s synth heavy score, but then it also has like a church organ that just comes in too. And it's you know, a lot like other Argento soundtracks, but this one sticks out to me, and I think this might be my favorite Argento movie too, which I don't know if that's crazy because it's not one of his like earlier ones. The soundtrack has always stuck out to me. So
I love like how giallos just like they're totally welcoming of like music and crazy scores and stuff like that. And, like just as crazy as like the plot is, like the score can get even crazier, you know? Yeah. It totally adds to the whole murder mystery. Damn, I can't remember. It kind of all blends together for me, honestly. I watch a giallo, like, which one was with the guy who like killed his wife, who did that?
Yeah, because they're all like, the plot is so like, there's such a formula to it, and then they just add a shit ton of style. Yeah,
like, I don't know. I don't know if I've seen it, but I have to watch it. I have to watch it for sure now.
I don't know if this is true or not, but I think it is maybe one of his only, like, it has to do with like Americans in it. I think it's still set in Rome, but it has like American characters in it. So it's not as, you know, I think maybe that's why it stuck out to me more, because it's maybe a little bit more accessible than some of his, even, I don't think it's as weird as some of his other ones. But yeah, it's about like an author of this like murder mystery book, and then someone starts committing murders like of people related to this book, and it all kind of ties together.
I think I've seen it. Sounds familiar.
And I think for me, I don't know if it's because it's like a more recent one too, but it this is the one I'm drawn to most, but and I'm sure if I listen to like some of his other scores, it probably sounds pretty similar, but especially that first track. I remember like
it's an easy one to reference, because I know I can find that one easily, because you're just saying the title theme in the first track, so I can listen to that during my dishes.
It's a great dishes song.
And I'll bridge this real quick, because you know that mine is related. Mine's Suspiria for number two. Just feel like all these like scores are very similar, and you could like just put them as albums to the same style. The Suspiria theme is also like very addicting, like one you could just put on while you drive. I feel like what you're saying, and is mainly, I feel like this movie is also just so beloved, partly because this music is so good, and also like I'll put like my like music production nerd hat on again. I just feel like this style and these scores are just so influential to modern rap music production. Not saying that people nowadays who make modern rap beats are, they're like, oh, I heard, you know, Tenabre and I made this track for, you know, Future or something like that, or Kanye. No, I just think it's like two different genres doing the same thing, but just for different, like the star is different, you know, for different canvases, like making very similar melodies, using the exact same sounds, having the same progressions, but are just four different things. I just can't help but like think that, like, as I hear these, like, the haunting Suspiria bells and how playful they are and just how it progresses and the bounciness. And then all of a sudden, like, a lead comes in and plays over these bells. That, like, and I found that with like other, when I've watched other giallos, I'm like, you know, I was just like, oh man, this could totally be like sampled into like a rap song from 2017 or something. It just sounds just like, just sounds like Metro Boomin to me.
Nice. The Spear is a great pick. Yeah.
That's actually my number one pick.
Three of these.
Look at that bridge.
Yeah. I actually, so yours is Suspiria, Dario Argento's Suspiria.
Yeah. Yeah. Is yours Tom York's?
Yeah. I like Tom York.
Oh, I was thinking about doing that too.
I like that we have both of them. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really good. Like, I'm not like a big Radiohead fan. Like, I don't know a lot about him, but I love the remake, and I love, like, exactly what you're saying. Like, I feel like it, like, it's so playful. Like, my favorite, like, I listen to his soundtrack like when I'm driving too, like, just like, yeah, this one called like The Hook or whatever. Just the, like you're saying with Suspiria, like the justice position of like, oh, these little playful bells, and like, yeah, you know, there's actually like this haunting, menacing like note undertone to it. And I think it really comes through in the music. And
well, I feel like the modern Suspiria is like, tries to have more of a narrative actually. So I feel like it gives Tom York more of a like, the need for a traditional score, but still his own thing. And I think he couldn't have been more perfect for scoring that film, which is trying to like stand on its own. Yeah,
that's very true. Yeah. Like, but I mean, Goblin, like they're fucking crazy, dude. It's crazy how good they are. Like,
all they are. They are pretty crazy.
Yeah,
I would see a show with Goblin for sure. I think a lot of people.
Oh, that'd be fun.
A lot of cinephiles specifically would.
Hell yeah, dude! Obviously, the second movie stands on like what the first movie built, you know. So yeah, it's like really it's really kind of paved the way for. But I like how it kind of like just adds a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
a little more modern too. But yeah, that's my number one pick.
This will be pretty quick on my end because my number one is The Shining. So I feel like when we talked about it earlier, I covered pretty much everything I wanted to cover. But yeah, I just think this is I've also been watching The Shining like multiple times over the past few months. It's really? Just been like on YouTube TV, and I just go to it. Yeah, just pop it on. And yeah, it's the music just stays with you. And it's a movie I could watch over and over again, I think, too. So yeah, it's perfect for this time of the year. Yeah.
Nice.
And being in Colorado, been to the Stanley Hotel a few times. Yeah. I like the...
Could be a better location to watch The Shining.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, the first time that I saw The Shining, I've said this on the podcast many times before, but it was at Red Rocks.
Oh really? That was your first viewing of The Shining, was at the Red Rocks?
At Red Rocks in 2015. Oh, wow. In college. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's something they do regularly, I'm sure, right? Like every
summer they have film on the rocks where they show movies. Lately, it's been a lot of like Marvel stuff, and I think that's because
that's such a shame.
They just want to get, you know, the crowd. But yeah. but back when I was in college and out here, that they would do more, like they would do The Shining, like Colorado, like kind of specific ones too. But yeah, they showed The Simpsons, The Shining before.
Wow.
Which was awesome. And then The Shining after. And
nice. Yeah.
That was definitely like the ideal like first viewing of The Shining. So yeah.
Nice. That's awesome, dude.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, now you watch it on TV all the time, and it probably just feels so small in comparison to that first viewing.
Week. Yeah. Yeah, that's my number one.
Nice. I like what you said earlier about like the, I won't get repetitive, but like the little details that you get every time. So like totally, I'm going to look out for those now. I'm like, it's totally a rewatchable movie where it's like, Still, a lot unsaid.
Every Kubrick is in a way, but like this, I think this one is like this one, and maybe I don't know. This is one of the ones that are maybe more rewatchable. I feel like, you know, that aren't as disturbing or as long or something like that. There's something about The Shining that has an accessibility over the others, maybe that make it easier to rewatch all the time.
Have you seen Dr. Sleep? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I have. I don't remember anything from it. I don't remember anything. I think I liked it when it came out. It's definitely very fan fiction-y and very Stephen King, you know, like in, I don't know, Stephen King like is good and stuff, but like when it's like connected to say The Shining, which is like The Shining is like made in a very anti-Stephen King fashion, it's like to have a follow-up to that that is more like Stephen King is just like, it's like kind of like damn. But it's not like I would expect Stanley Kubrick to make Dr. Sleep or anything like that, you know.
Yeah, but plus didn't like Stephen King make his own The Shining?
Yeah. Well, it's like laughably, if you ever see scenes from it, it's laughably terrible. If it's like TV movie level, it's just so awful.
That's why it's like the Shining itself. It's like Kubrick's such a visionary for what he's able to pull off.
Yeah.
You know, he can see the picture of like what he wants and he's able to achieve
it. But apparently he thought like the book sucked, which is kind of hilarious because like he's adapted
it. Apparently Wendy Carlos and Rachel Elkind, who did like the score, they were really close to like suing him because he like was like fucking with their stuff or whatever, like not using a lot of things. They would make scores for him that would like never show up or something like that. So I think it was like after Clockwork Orange or after The Shining, one of them said like, I'm never going to work with this guy again.
There's a lot of those stories of like him making people like that, go insane. I'm never working with him again. He made me do this many takes or whatever. He was, he's fucking crazy.
I feel like there's some like negative stuff about like Shelley Duvall and how like she just was like traumatized from like this experience.
This is a woman who worked with Robert Altman. And she says that Kubrick drives her
crazy. That's insane. Okay. Yeah. My number one is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, scored by John Carpenter.
Is this the one that they wrote off? Like they like rewrote the ending of this, or is this
John Carpenter and Alan Howarth? I don't know anything about that. But I also don't know anything really about this movie, so like don't ask me, you know.
is this the like Season of the Witch one, is that it?
This is one that like that Michael Myers isn't even in this movie. This is the Halloween sequel with no Michael Myers, and it's actually like I watched this with like friends in college, and you know, it's like one of those things where you watch, or your friend, you're with friends in college, just sitting around, you're like smoking weed, and you're watching how you're like, I'm watching Halloween 3 and you're not seeing Michael Myers. And it's just like, it's just driving you crazy that you're not seeing Michael Myers for the most of you. Like, what is this movie? What is
Halloween? When's he going to show up? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what's very frustrating about it is that, like, the rest of the movie feels like a Halloween movie. But just the villain is not Michael Myers. It's and I think this movie is more. See, I told you I don't know anything.
Is this the one with more, like, the masks?
Yeah, like people, I think, are more going insane themselves.
They put the masks on and go crazy or something like
that? I think so, yeah.
I remember liking this one.
Yeah, no, like, it's actually good, is the thing. Here, kids all over America want silver shamrock masks for Halloween. Dr. Daniel Shalis seeks to uncover a plot by silver shamrock owner Conal Cochran. Those are such specific names for this, this film. But anyways, I think one of the main reasons why I enjoyed Halloween 3 so much when I saw it is the score is a banger. It is John Carpenter just going full on with his, like, all his synths that he's using. It's so great, and it's so Carpenter and playful and fun, and it sounds like a Halloween movie, you know, for sure. It has that to going for it. And you can re-listen to this. It's so fun. I was listening to this before this. It's a great time, and I have to think that that is the main reason that I liked Halloween 3. Is Carpenter's score is just so good.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna watch that this Halloween.
That's a good one. Yeah, I can't remember the, like, the score as, like, distinctly as the original Halloween.
It's just, I mean, just picture any Carpenter score, like,
yeah,
They Live, or like stuff that he did later on after Halloween, because he's using more, like, it sounds like the 80s, you know, that sort of thing. A lot of 80s arpeggios, and they're kind of goofy, you know, because they're goofy but good, you know, because Carpenter's not classically trained, but obviously he has a great feel for music.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could have picked Halloween easily for, like, this whole list, because Halloween's score is so fantastic and I think is very so effective in its simplicity, but really, if you know, just how it makes you so scared in this fake suburban town. But I don't know. I thought this was just more different, and I like all the synths in it, and all the things he's doing there. Yeah, and has a lot of variety too. Has a lot more variety when I feel like Halloween's score throughout sounds more like the same, or maybe They Live, I think, also sounds very similar. Like, you know, like the same things playing over and over again. I think, like, Halloween 3 actually has, like, a catalog of very different, like, songs in it, you know?
Yeah, I feel like you can't go wrong with a John Carpenter synth score. And I actually like hearing him talk about the music that he does for the movies, how he's, like, very open. Like, he doesn't have any, like, musical knowledge or, like, you know, music theory knowledge at all, but he just knows what sounds good, and he knows, like, what sound he wants. Mm-hmm. And he's just, like, able to do it. Yeah, I just think I think it's cool when, like, a director just kind of takes the reins over, like, something like that too, because they just know so well, like, what they want for the movie. So yeah,
he's scrappy as hell, you know, like, he
yeah,
he wants to make a movie, and he's like, he's gonna make it. I think that's so cool. I respect that so much, that it's just like, he's very open about like, I'm not classically trained at this, but like, he knows what he wants. He has the vision. It's cool. It's cool that you have like a bookend too. Like, you have The Thing and then you have Halloween 3. It's kind of like the full little.
Didn't plan it out that way. I could have easily had, you know, them not bookended, but it ended up like that. Yeah.
Oh, you know that Halloween house is over in Pasadena here?
Yeah, me? I went once with my brother and my cousin, and yeah, it doesn't really seem like it because Pasadena's built up so much around it, but I could see it. It does look like it, but maybe the neighborhood around is just like, how is this it?
There's a coffee shop next to it, and like I go
yeah,
there.
That, well, that, and there's like a train station and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah. So weird.
It's really weird. Wait, so you go to a coffee shop right next to it, pretty much?
Yeah,
usually?
I do. Yeah.
Nice.
I didn't know it was the Halloween house, so someone was like, "Hey, you know, that's the Halloween house," and I was like, "Like, what Halloween? What are you talking about?"
The Myers of that's pretty mind-blowing. Yeah, that's pretty mind-blowing. No, like, I actually, like, we suck. That's not the right grammar. We went to go seek it out.
We suck it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. We suck it out of the ground. I drink your milkshake.
That's funny. I like watching Halloween and like, it's set in Illinois, obviously, and yeah. I love trying to just like pick apart the like the clearly obvious like California aspects of this town that's supposed to be set in Illinois, yeah. Like the palm trees in the background or the outdoor school, and the clearly like the trees are all like green, but then there's like dead leaves on the ground somehow.
Yeah. It's very green, but yeah, there's definitely dead leaves just poured around on
yeah. Wow. Well, that's our list.
Yeah, that's our scores and soundtracks for this spooky season. Yeah, thanks for coming on, Jack. A lot of fun, man. And yeah, you're a great guy and a great movie lover.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for having me on, you guys. I'm proud of us. I think we all have really good lists that all kind of complement one another. And yeah, like definitely... Yeah, thanks for making me think about music a little differently. You know, I'm going to go watch some of these movies now. I think Chopping Mall first, and...
Of course.
Yeah, three. You guys see that?
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, and you feel free to come on anytime for other subjects. We have unlimited things we could do always. So, yeah, definitely come back.
Hell yeah. Thank you.